It all began over a glass of wine at dinner, Dr. Mona Hansa Atisha says, when a friend of hers suggested there might be something fundamentally wrong with Flint's drinking water. Residents had complained about brown, smelly water coming out of their taps. Hannah Atisha had treated some children for rashes who had washed in the water. But state environmental and health officials gave assurances the water was safe. It wasn't.
Something fundamental was missing in the treatment of this water. They did not add something called corrosion control, which is an absolute no-brainer in the water world. It's like a medicine that goes in the water treatment that prevents the pipes from corroding and getting into the drinking water, because there is lead in all of our plumbing. So this is a necessary ingredient in water treatment. When a pediatrician hears the word lead, you know, you put your glass down and it's a call to action. It's something that you don't mess around with. It's a potent, irreversible neurotoxin. We've known what lead has done and continues to do for centuries. And that really kind of was my first inkling, my call to action to figure out what was going on.
And then what was your next step?
My next step was to have data in my pocket. So I wanted to see if that lead in the water was getting into the bodies of our children. Then I just looked back at our clinic data and looked at the lead levels before the water switched and looked at the lead levels after the water switched and found that the percentage of kids with elevated lead levels doubled after the water switch. And that was contrary to really everything that was happening in our nation, in our state, and in our city, where for the last 30 years or so, we've been decreasing the number of children with lead poisoning. You know, that's when we went, you know, public with this information. You know, it's not something you sit on. It's not something that physicians usually do. We publish our research. You know, we have it go through the peer review process. But we had this very ethical, professional, moral obligation to alert our patients and our kids that there is something wrong with this water.
Right. You went public with this right away. That resulted in your being attacked immediately by the officials in the city, by the officials in the state. What happened there?
Yeah, so I shouldn't have been surprised, but right after we went public, I was dismissed. I was called an unfortunate researcher, that I was causing near hysteria, and it really was a continuation of dismissal. You know, the people of Flint, they raised their voices right away, right when the water switched. You know, they were raising their voices, saying, "Hey, my water's brown. It smells weird. It tastes weird. My kid's having problems," and they were dismissed. Everybody was dismissed, the moms, the activists, the pastors, the investigative journalists, the water scientists. This heroic professor from Virginia Tech, Mark Edwards, came to Flint, and he used citizen science to prove, hey, there's lead in the water. We have a problem. He was dismissed. He was called a magician that pulls rabbits out of hats, like as if he pulls lead everywhere.
Now, I realize that we're talking about all of this with hindsight, but I have to wonder, why would these agencies and these public officials responsible for safeguarding the health and the quality of the water on the state level, why would they be so resistant to someone saying there was something wrong?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that is the reason we have about 300 lawsuits against the state. And that's the reason we have multiple investigations. And that's the reason we have about 12 people who've been criminally charged. Nobody wakes up and says, "Today I'm going to poison a population." So why people weren't doing their job, I have no idea. You know, your only job is to make sure that the water is safe. Your only job is to make sure that you know, public health is being protected. I have no answer to the why this happened.
Where was the U.S. EPA in all of this?
Yeah, so the U.S. EPA had some heroism and had some issues. There was an amazing EPA scientist named Miguel Del Toro, who actually came to Flint, who, you know, checked out a woman's home, wrote this amazing memo saying, "Hey, there's a widespread lead in water problem." However, he was silenced. The state of Michigan also dismissed him, called him a rogue employee. And he offered even to pay with his own money. He's like, "I am willing to use my own money to prove that there's a lead and water problem in Flint." So he wasn't listened to either. The EPA Inspector General did do an investigation and wrote a report that said that the EPA should have acted 7 months earlier. So there was significant delays. And because of Flint, there's now a new law that passed Congress called an EPA notification bill, that if the EPA knows about a lead and water problem, they can't sit on it. They have to make it public.
How can we now know that there aren't other communities that are experiencing some of the same problem that Flint has had.
Yeah, so, you know, I wasn't naive to start. You know, I assumed that the water that came out of my tap was safe. Like, in your head, you imagine people in white coats with test tubes, like, checking the water, making sure it's safe. It's 2017. We are in America, the richest country in the world. We're not a developing country. You know, we, in Michigan, Flint is literally in the middle of the Great Lakes. We're in the middle of the largest source of fresh water in the world. You assume that what comes out of your tap is safe. I no longer believe that in Flint nor anywhere else in this country. The rules on the book to guarantee safe drinking water are not strong enough. The lead and copper rule, which was at the crux of the Flint story, is very weak. It doesn't maximally protect people. So we, you know, there's lead and water issues everywhere, and there's an underestimation of risk. So until we get the lead out of all of our plumbing, and there's lead really in all of our plumbing. Lead was used in service lines. It wasn't restricted until 1986, and there's lead in brass faucets that weren't restricted until 2014. So until we can have massive investment in getting the lead out, we need to educate our families on how to protect themselves.
How do you do that?
Right. There's a lot of things that people can do to protect themselves from lead and water. Number one is using a filter. There are lead clearing filters. And filters should be used for vulnerable populations, for pregnant moms because it crosses in utero, and for babies on formula. So I used to tell my moms in clinic, hey, tap water is fine. Don't waste your money on nursery water or fancy water. Of course, breastfeeding is best. But imagine these babies who are on this powdered formula mixed with this tap water when their brains are developing the most. So, you know, and so filters help clear the lead. So filters really should be used everywhere if you want to minimize your risk, especially for these most developmentally vulnerable populations. Flushing. We need to always run our water, run cold water until it gets super cold, and that's the water from, you know, the main line. In pregnant mom visits in Europe, it's part of routine, anticipatory guidance, you know, do this for your baby, take your vitamins, run your cold water. So flushing needs to be part of everybody's routine. If you haven't used your water for more than 6 hours, everybody should flush their cold water.
Right. Run it for a while before you drink it or before you use it for cooking.
Absolutely.
Run the tap for a while.
Exactly. And then my mother-in-law used to always tell me this, and I didn't believe it, but she's like, never use hot water for cooking or drinking. And I'm like, oh, I don't believe anything my mother-in-law says. But it's actually true. So you should never use hot water for cooking and drinking because the heat increases the leaching of lead from your plumbing. So you should always use cold water for cooking and drinking. And when my babies were small, like if I wanted to make macaroni and cheese, like I used hot water because it made the water boil faster. But that precipitates, concentrates all the lead in whatever you're cooking. So there's basic things that everyday people can do to protect themselves and their families until we get the lead out of our plumbing, until we strengthen these regulations that are on the books. And it's frightening because we are now at a time in our nation where we may actually see weakening of these regulations, a dismissal of science, a disinvestment in public health. So it's really up to people to protect their families as much as they can.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. We're talking with Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, who is a pediatrician in Flint, Michigan, and who first revealed the crisis of lead in the water there to the public. Doctor, what's being done for the children of Flint now who are affected by the lead in the water? As you mentioned, it affects neurological development, among other things.
Yeah, so, you know, this is how I have the privilege of spending my everyday now, is flipping the story around for our kids. So we know what lead does. We know it impacts cognition, behavior. It has these life course trajectory implications. So in Flint, we're not sitting back and we're not going to watch these kids and tell you, you know, what's happening to them in 5, 10, 15 years. We are trying to do something that hasn't been done before. We are trying to wrap our kids around with every evidence-based intervention to mitigate the impact of this exposure and to promote their development. So we're investing in things like home visiting and maternal infant support programs and nutrition and early education and school health services and access to your doctor and developmental screening. All of these things have been put in place so that we don't see the consequences of lead. We can't take it away. It's an irreversible neurotoxin, but we are very much investing our kids to really limit the impact of this exposure.
How has this experience impacted you personally?
Well, I feel that I have adopted about 10,000 children. And my Flint kids are absolutely just like, you know, my biologic children. And, you know, that same urgency and that adrenaline high that we had when we were doing our research, like this, you know, we can't sleep, we need to figure out what's going on, has been ongoing because the clock is ticking. And, you know, we need to get these kids everything right now to really promote their development and to not see these consequences. So my days are longer, it is the most rewarding job in the world, and I feel absolutely privileged to be able to serve these kids and to be able to reassure and hopefully continue to inspire them that they're going to be okay, and they're probably going to be better than okay with what we hope to bring to them.
You are an Iraqi American,
yeah.
And I would be remiss, given what's going on in our country right now, if I did not ask you about this. Your parents were refugees from a country that is now on a list where we are trying to ban visitors from that country.
Yeah.
Tell me your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so we immigrated to this country when I was 4. So I was born in the UK, and the plan was to go, my father was getting his PhD, and the plan was to go back to Iraq, where we were from. Arabic is my first language, but Saddam Hussein was rising in power, and there was this, you know, a future that for me that would have been full of oppression and fear. The Iran-Iraq war was about to start and would kill 1 million people. So my parents came to the U.S., came for that American dream, and I was every day grateful to live that American dream. And that has followed me and has driven me to a career in service. If this ban was in place in 1980 when we came, I would not be here. So it is mind-boggling. It's unfortunate to think about what we are losing as a nation, the potential that we are losing in our future. Are we losing the next kid who's going to invent the cure for cancer, or the next kid who solves our economic issues, or the next, you know, kid who creates a tech, you know, startup? So it is very troubling, because when I came to this country, I was supported and I was celebrated and I was not victimized, and the same cannot be said today.
Well, you came here seeking the American dream, or
Absolutely.
Your parents did, and now you are helping other children, American children, to seek the American dream, a very powerful story.
Absolutely.
We have been talking with Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, who is a pediatrician and director of pediatric residency at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. She is also the doctor who first revealed to the public the crisis of lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Judy Valente.